Judah and Matthew are dumpster people, and they occasionally use foul and inappropriate language. Listen at your own risk.
Welcome to Brother Date. I'm Matthew.
I'm Judah.
I don't even know what episode this is. My notes say 144. Is that right? Of the Star Trek?
Week 144 of the Star Trek project. I think this is going to be episode 284.
Okay. Well.
Of the pod.
It's, we had some time off. Judah went abroad. But yes, just to get sick. He only went to get a little bit sick and then get sick again and then come home. So.
I don't know what you're talking about. I had basically 24 illness-free hours in Japan.
Well, there you go. And I'm sure you enjoyed them. There was a hotel.
I mean, yeah.
A breakfast, probably, before you were sick.
We even got to do some of the Tokyo stuff before I got sick.
There you go. Yeah, man, I got sick every time I ever went on vacation. I only stopped getting sick when COVID happened because then I was smart and wore a mask on the airplane like a smart person. Every other time I got sick as a dog.
You can wear a mask on the airplane, but if your wife has developed COVID from maybe a job interview before you even get on the plane, it becomes a little tough.
I like that she has triangulated the source of that COVID.
Hey, if you woke up the day you were supposed to start your vacation in Japan and you'd
think
COVID
a lot about it,
couldn't go to Japan, you'd be thinking about it.
Yeah, you got a lot of time to think about it when you're not in Japan.
You definitely would be like, no, where in the hell did I get COVID?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's one of those enterprises that is pretty much always fruitless. Because, of course, you can never really tell.
There's nothing you
can
do about it.
Yeah, but it is nice to think about who you're going to pay back in the future for what they did to you.
You can't call up somebody and say, hey, you remember that job I didn't get? Well, you also gave me COVID.
That's right. You doubly fucked me. I'm going to get you back. I'm going to put a fish in your tailpipe. Where did they put the fish in Dirty Work? Was it just in the house or something? I don't remember. I'm not rewatching Dirty Work.
Did they put a fish in an air vent? I know they
something
filled
like
the.
It was
I know they filled the engine compartment with popcorn.
Popcorn. That's right. Yeah,
I remember that.
Yeah, I'm never watching that again. So
there's nothing good about the movie Dirty Work except. No. After Norm Macdonald is sexually assaulted in jail, when he tells them, you guys have a lot of growing up to do.
Yes. A movie that does not sensitively handle the topic of sexual assault in prison, for sure.
Yeah. But, you know, directed by Bob Saget.
Yep, that was the perfect inflection for that.
Yeah.
That might be something to somebody, maybe.
Yeah, so it has been a month since we've done one of these fucking things, but luckily I watched the episodes recently, so I could still sort of remember them.
I watched one of them pretty recently. The other two, yeah, I watched the DS9 like a few days ago, so I'll remember that one a little bit.
I knew if I watched them before I went to Japan that my notes would be just as good as reading Memory Alpha.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd just be like, I don't remember that. But
except you'd be like, man, whoever wrote these notes is so snarky.
Yeah.
I bet the episode wasn't that dumb. All right. Well, why don't we just jump into this thing then?
Well,
we don't do mailbag anymore. We don't do any other segments, and we never will, because this is enough.
Yeah, Ryan did send us a couple of emails, but and also he did tweet at us on Twitter that he was giving up Twitter for Lent, and that's why we got emails. So yeah, no mailbag, but. We're going to jump right into it.
Okay.
So the big loser last week was The Next Generation with Starship Mine, which I gave 2 points to, which is frankly...
That's really bad. That's
frankly
bad.
Why it scored so low.
I mean, I didn't give it a lot of points because it clearly did not attempt to have a premise, but yeah, it's that means lessons. is the one that we watched this week.
Yeah, yeah. This week's episode is a lot less stupid, but will it score points? It is Lessons.
Yeah.
Picard comes to the bridge in the middle of the night, like 3 a.m., because he wants to talk to an archaeologist on Landris 2, and he needs Data to make that phone call for him for some reason. Maybe if Data puts the call in from the bridge, Picard doesn't get charged for it, because then it's like official business.
Oh, I don't his know. Self-improvement credits are restored or whatever.
Yeah, maybe he's been spending them on stuff. It's hard to say, but he does come all the way up to the bridge to ask Data to blow a call in for him. And Data says, yeah, we've got a communications blackout right now. Stellar Cartography is doing an experiment. So then he goes into his ready room and he's like, well, I'm going to at least read about what's going on Landris 2.
That's right. Yeah.
Library computers offline for Stellar Cartography.
Fucking A.
How is he ever going to find out what's up on Landris 2? And by the way, spoiler alert, we never do.
Never comes up again. I mean, he makes it pretty clear this is just his dumb hobby. He says something dumb like he's going to do some work.
Uh-huh.
But then it's very clearly just his dumb hobby that he's working on.
3 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then he tries to make a cup of tea, and guess what? The replicators are offline too. So he goes down to Stellar Cartography to see what the fuck's going on. But even just opening the door, fucks up everybody's night vision in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they can't fly the needles or whatever.
Yeah, it seems like they're actually just playing a game in there, but you interrupted their cool gaming marathon.
Uh-huh. Well, whatever it is. Is it Ramirez? I didn't even write it down.
It might have been Ramirez. I don't remember.
Somebody who's not important can't do the experiment right, and it fucks everything up. And now we meet Lieutenant Commander Nella Darren, who is real shirty about it until she sees that it's Picard who came in.
Yeah.
And then she gives him a special herbal tea blend with no caffeine.
Yeah.
She's out here.
Because he was like, I got up for tea or whatever. And she's like, what are you drinking? And he's like, Earl Grey. And she's like, oh, no wonder you can't sleep. And he doesn't say, mind your own fucking business.
Yeah.
Save it.
He doesn't say, hey, you're going to be getting up at 3 a.m. now.
That's right. From now on.
Guess what?
This is your new shift.
Yeah. I hope you like this shift because, she's out here trying to come up with a new gravimetric model or something. You know, the kind of science you do on a battleship.
Yeah. Yep.
And she's almost age appropriate for him, so look out.
Yeah, I know. She's definitely in her middle ages. Hot.
Yep.
Looks great in a jumpsuit, though.
I shouldn't run my mouth because I think the actress was like a year younger than I am now.
No, we're back to doing that math. That's all right, because Spiner was still older, and that's what matters.
Yeah, that's right. But Worf's only 27.
Also, Sienna Miller is younger than you, but looks older.
Yeah, thank you, Marshawn. That was important. That's important news.
She kept talking about it. I was like, why don't you just text him then? Why don't you just text Judah and let him know that Sienna Miller is younger but looks older than him? And she didn't want to do that. So I said, I passed the message along.
Yeah, I did appreciate hearing that news.
Yeah.
Well, this lady makes a big impression on Picard. And you know about it because he is telling Beverly all about meeting her at dinner.
Yeah.
And by the way, he serves her an herbal tea blend that he, quote, found in the replicator. Mm-hmm, yep. And there's no reason for him not to tell that it came from her. So you know that he feels some guilt about this.
Yeah, he knows this would be a big problem. He's like, here, try this fucking herbal tea blend. She's like, oh, where'd you get it? From my new girlfriend, Nella.
Yeah.
How you like that?
Then they go to Data's cool recital, and guess who's playing the piano? That's right, Nella Darren.
Yeah, he ain't never seen this chick before, but now he's seeing her everywhere.
Yeah, now she's fucking all over this. She's haunting his dreams now.
Isn't that just what it's fucking like?
There's a scene, in this scene where he's very taken with her piano playing, Troy is right behind him, and I kept expecting her to, like, look at him like she could tell he's horned up or something. But I guess if that was ever intended, it was not. It didn't make the final episode.
No, she didn't give him the Sarek look.
I thought it would give me a Sarek.
Exactly. She should give the exact same look, like she's very concerned about how horny he is. You know, because he's old.
Yeah.
Might be bad for
him. It's not cool.
Yeah.
Exactly. He's got an artificial heart. Can he even do it?
That's right. It's not clear because he's never done it before. So since he's never done it, there's no proof he can do it.
Yeah. He may have done it in a Q vision or also a near-death experience.
Yeah, or a near-death experience where or the one where the probe made him live a whole life. He had kids, so I assume he did it that time.
And by the way, if it was a near-death experience, it's possible that he, like us, never saw himself do it.
That's
it
true.
Cut away in his experience, and he still doesn't know what it's like.
Because he doesn't know, because he doesn't have any experience, so his brain just went, hey, skip that.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, skipped it because all of his understandings of an adult relationship come from the equivalent of network TV, where it just cuts away.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And then
also
later,
whatever Worf tells
putting
them
their
on
boots
the
back on.
Sometimes Worf says stuff on the bridge, and that's what he's.
It is
to
true, but Worf read that stuff in Klingon Wikipedia. So, well, everybody liked the show, and afterwards, Picard has some unusually technical compliments for her. Almost like he asked Data what he could say about her playing right before the camera got to him.
Noticed you, that arpeggio that you played.
The second arpeggio.
Not a typical decision that someone would make there. Yes, I am a musician.
Yes. Oh, why do you ask?
He's so pathetic.
It's extremely pathetic. Darren tries to get more sensor time from Riker, who has promised it to engineering. And she goes right to Picard's quarters. I assumed to try an end run around Riker,
mm-hmm.
which we know he loves, by the way.
Yeah.
But then when she gets there, he's playing his Resican flute, and she gets real interested in that instead. And he has to be like, I don't want to get into it because I have not dealt with any of this trauma.
Yeah.
But anyway, these guys are all dead, so they don't make this flute no more.
That's right. This is so limited edition. Check it out.
Yeah, exactly. She's like, I've never seen that before. And he should say, really? It's a fucking tin whistle.
I don't know, just look at any of the shittiest whistles. It looks just
have you
like
not heard
this.
Tell of a recorder?
Yeah, it looks kind of, recorder's just like a fat version of this. Otherwise, it's the fucking same.
Well, I guess maybe she didn't come there to try to get more sensor time because she did bring her toy piano that she unrolls.
I guess because he was so fucking excited about that concert. I don't know.
Yeah, she brought her little piano. Even though they've got one on the ship somewhere. Do you think they jammed that grand piano back into the fucking replicator after that concert? Are they making a new grand piano every time they need one?
Here's the thing, you only have to get the tiniest little amount into the little replicator slot. So they just kind of turn it on its side and put one leg in there.
But it still gets the whole thing somehow?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder. Maybe they just stick it in one of the empty rooms down by the whales.
Maybe it's someone's job to break that thing down into little pieces then throw it into the replicator.
I mean, O'Brien's not on the ship anymore, so it's someone else, but in a real O'Brien type, I forget the name of the guy who has to clean up who gets the tickets and has to clean out the holodeck.
No.
We gave him a name, but
Dwayne
or Rodney or something. Randy?
Randy. It was Randy, yeah. Even though they were all under the influence of Sarek that time, it's that Aussie guy. He has this fucking, he's got the bad luck. He's drawn this job. But long ago, he discovered it's actually faster to just vaporize it and change the patch of carpet underneath it.
Yeah.
So.
They just wheel it down to Cargo Bay 4 and open the doors. No more piano.
What a waste. What a waste.
500 years from now, a Ferengi shuttle's going to run into it. It's the same temperature as the rest of space, and it's painted black. They had no way to know it was there.
No one's going
to
see that thing before it hits.
Anyway, they start playing the Bach piece that he's been working on with the computer, but he's not used to playing with a real girl in it, so he gets nervous. And she's like, oh, all right, let's switch. We'll switch modes here. Do you know Frère Jacques? I know you've been working on Bach, but let's try something a little easier.
So
and by a little easier,
was so condescending. I, not a musician. Let me tell you, man, I play a mean Frère Jacques.
Yeah. Okay? Well, I mean, it's not that tough.
No.
It's not one of the tougher ones.
That's the point.
No one's like, hey, you know what's complicated? Frère Jacques.
She skips straight to the fucking most elementary thing she can think of.
But because we're not supposed to think about how condescending this is, they start to get funky with it.
Hey, man, this is the most hilarious scene maybe in the history of Star Trek. I laughed so hard during this scene.
It puts a big old smile on his face to the point where the very next scene is him on the bridge asking Riker to fence with him.
Yeah, and he like fucking jabs him with his finger and stuff. It's not. I was very surprised they didn't mutiny.
Surprised. All right. First of all, get the fuck out of my notes.
But... all I'm saying is the one time he went up there and sang a drinking song and they were like, fuck this. Yeah, yeah. This right, guy's right, going down.
Let's cut right to the second sentence in my characterization, which is, remember when Riker called together the mutiny squad because Picard sang a drinking song in 10 Forward? Mm-hmm. But now he could be like, you and I should do fencing. And Riker's just worried that his ship daddy's going to like his new girlfriend better.
He's like fucking making sword noises and shit.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm guessing that the only reason Riker's cool with this is because Troy already told him on the down low what's going on.
Yeah, I guess that's probably true.
Beverly gets to hear from Nella Darren all about these duets because she's got a strain in her piano playing arm, plus something Beverly calls nipple burn.
Yeah, it's not good. Yeah, well, at one point Nella goes, I guess we jacked it too. I mean, I guess we just went too hard on that duet. I didn't get like a weird tendonitis from jacking it too hard for sure.
She doesn't say to Beverly, listen, do you get the impression that this guy's a virgin? Because he wanted me to masturbate and he wanted to masturbate, but he didn't want to touch me in any way.
No.
Does that, based on, you've known him a long time, right? Does that seem...
Yeah, when he was done, he shouted, all done!
He did shout, all done. Yeah, it was weird. She's got another date with him on the books. This time, they put on casual clothes and go into the Jeffries tubes to a spot where she says it sounds, quote, bathroom good.
Yeah.
She plays a little Beethoven for him, and in return, he plays the special song from his video game.
Yeah, he played fucking Look Back on Your Way. It was great.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they should have had him
play
it.
That would have been rad.
That would have been so cool.
There's somebody on that ship that plays the air who may be Deng.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't know why you had to do that, but you could
be. I mean, Deng's the one of the only... I've already said Ramirez. I guess it could have been him.
Could be Thompson or...
Well, you're making people up now.
Well, Ben, maybe.
Oh, Ben? You don't know about Ben yet.
You don't know. Ben might be able
don't
to play
it. Don't
introduce
Ben early. He might play the Eru.
Lavelle could play it. Why couldn't Lavelle play it as a way to kiss up to somebody at some point earlier in his
role? I mean, I really think of him more as a zither type, but sure.
Canadian, sir. Canadian. I can't wait for that guy.
I think we're still a ways out from that one.
Yeah, it's season 7.
She jumps in, they play that song together. You know, I said from his video game, it's the folk melody from The Inner Light.
Mm-hmm.
The sound makes it all the way down to main engineering. But then it stops when Data rolls up because, Picard and Darren have put down their instruments and walked to a central spot in the junction away from where they were playing music to kiss.
Yep. For the shot, they imagined it would be a really good shot if they kissed.
They were thinking about what if there was a camera here. It would be better if we were standing over
here. Yes, it looked pretty good.
Yeah. So things are going pretty good, but in the turbo lift on the way back, because I guess they didn't climb back through the Jeffries tubes, or I don't know.
No, man. I assumed they were going back to get railed, but
yeah. You know. Some ensign walks in, comes into the turbo lift. And Picard climbs right up.
Yeah.
He's just, you know, it's like referring to her by her rank, not talking about, you know, what he wants to do to her.
No longer facing her in the turbo lift.
Yeah, not facing her
anymore. Faces the doors. You know, cool stuff from an experienced guy who's had lots of girlfriends.
And now, an inciting incident.
Oh, okay, good. I like this.
The Federation outpost on Bursalis 3 is reporting firestorm activity 8 months early.
Oh, I'm back out again.
And that's vaguely interesting, and they got 2 days to kill, so off they go.
Yeah. There are colonists there, man.
Yeah. They're not in any danger yet, but don't worry. It is good. It is good that Enterprise is going there. That does end up being nice for the colonists.
Yep.
Picard calls Troi into his office to talk about his new relationship. She fucking knows all about it, and so does everybody else on the ship. But she says, hey, man, we're all pretty happy for you, and yeah, you may as well try it.
Yeah, man, go for it. Yeah. We all really want you to score very badly, so please try.
So then he goes to apologize to Nella for the awkwardness in the turbo lift, and then he takes her back to his quarters to explain all about his weird second life that he once had.
Yes, yes, yes. Get into it, buddy. Tell her all about it, but also tell her to tell everyone this time. The people wanted you to tell everyone. Please don't make... Oh, he's making it a big secret again. Oh, he straight up told her it's a big secret. You can't tell anyone. Oh,
yeah,
God.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's like, yeah, the planet was called Catan. Anyway, they're gone.
They're gone.
But don't worry about
it. It's very private. I have to whisper it even though we're alone in my quarters.
She doesn't say, Jesus, man, are you in therapy? They just kiss some more.
Yeah, that's hot. That's that kind of hot stuff. Girls are into that. If you tell them you lived a life, a whole lifetime, and your wife died and everything.
I had a wife and a children and a grandchild, and they're all dead, and they never lived.
Yeah. Anyway.
But I lived that whole life. It was all real.
That's that wetness right there, man. That's how you get it.
Anyway, then I woke up, and it was 25 minutes later, and I had to try to get back to my real life.
I woke up and saw Riker's angry fucking face looking down at me. It was the rudest awakening.
Darren is doing another walk and talk with Riker. She's trying to get a transfer of some ensign into her department, and now Riker feels like he's in, quote, a position, and goes to talk to Picard about it.
Yeah.
Picard tells him, you're still my guy. Just do your job.
Yeah, man.
It's all going to be fine. But this is exactly what he was worried about, and he is very preoccupied about it that night with Nella Darren. So they talk about it and about the perceived conflicts, and they agree to try to forget about it for now. And it's good, because this is when they get a call that Bursalis 3 is now requesting an evacuation.
Yeah, those firestorms are bad, man.
And they don't really have enough time to get everybody out, but luckily, guest star of the week, Nella Darren, knows how to cross-connect thermal deflectors to make a firewall, because, you know, she's an astrometric scientist, she's a stellar cartographer.
She's allowed to be in the meeting for some reason.
Yep. Not only that, but I think there are other members of her team in the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
There's at least one other guy in blue, might be Ramirez, didn't get a good look at him.
Yeah.
So that's the plan, and because she brought it up and no one else knows what the fuck she's talking about, it's going to be her job to set it up. Picard, privately, after the meeting, offers her the chance to send someone else down instead, but she says, hey man, this is the job, and she goes on down.
Yeah, that's a real shitty thing that he did, but we will get into it.
Picard watches her beam down with the team, then he goes to the bridge to monitor it on the planet. Darren's having trouble keeping the deflectors cross-connected. She needs, the whole team is going to have to stay with them to keep them up manually, though there's no real guarantee that they will protect them from the big firestorm.
Yeah.
Picard has to give the order to stay with the deflectors and protect the colonists. The storm hits the perimeter. Picard goes down to sick bay. Riker's in there, but he says perimeter teams 3 and 6 are still missing, and he doesn't know how they could have survived.
Also, Nella Darren is on one of those teams.
Yeah, she's with Team 6. Yeah. That's where she was last time he saw her. Well, Picard goes to his quarters and sits there for a minute, and then he stands up and closes the box to his flute meaningfully. But then Worf calls and reports that there are survivors beaming up now, and he heads on down to the transporter room. Darren isn't there.
Hold on,
there she is.
Hold on. He angrily says to the flute, you thought you were a secret before. Wait until you see what happens now.
This is trauma on trauma.
No one's ever going to know about your whole society.
No one's ever going to hear that song again.
That's right. Well, he's never gonna play again because guilty Hanna-Barbera hands ain't got no rhythm. Did you see his Hanna-Barbera hands? Oh, okay, we'll talk about it.
Look, he's got square little fingers. What do you want?
Okay, it's in my quick hitters. We'll talk about it later.
Okay.
I laughed so hard. Ask Marshall, I laughed for like 10 minutes. I couldn't stop laughing at his Hanna-Barbera hands. Anyway.
She isn't there when he first gets to the transporter room, but oop, the last two survivors beam in, and it's Nella Darren and Little Dang.
Yeah.
They don't say anything to one another. And then we get a captain's log where Picard says 8 crew members died, and the math on that is really weird.
Yeah.
Because only teams 3 and 6 were left behind, and they were 2-man teams.
Yeah, I think Riker might have discounted.
One of the members from Team 6, two of the members from Team 6 survived, so it's like, well, now hang on a second.
Yeah, Riker didn't get it right, I think.
I don't know what those other 8 people were. Maybe only teams 3 and 6 were safe.
Yeah, maybe that's what he meant.
That's what he should have said.
What he should have said, right.
Darren explains to Picard how they use their phasers as like a different other kind of shield.
Yeah.
And then she also tells him that, yeah, maybe she found herself getting a little mad at him for ordering them to hold their positions. But mainly she just worried that he was going to blame himself if she died.
Mm.
And he says he realized when he saw her in the transporter room that he could never put her in jeopardy again. And she says, yeah, okay, that's obviously not going to work. I'll apply for a transfer.
Yep.
She makes him promise never to give up his music, and she walks out at the end.
His first real girlfriend, over so fast. That was quick.
Yeah. It really was kind of an in-theory length relationship, wasn't it?
Yep, just the length of one episode.
Are you interpreting all the symbols? Searching your subconscious for their meaning?
Chaco, man, I got this. Is TNG, I got this. This is an easy one. The captain is always the captain, and the responsibilities reach into all aspects of his life, ? I guess, but if his girlfriend was a civilian and didn't live on his ship, he's fine, right?
I mean, he tries to suggest a long-distance relationship.
Yeah, she ain't gonna do that, buddy. She wants to get a little. Just a little bit of action.
She should have said, what are you, 65? A long-distance relationship?
67, actually.
Class of 26.
I gave it a 4. I don't care about the captain. We already know this.
That is the big problem with the episode. It's called Lessons.
Yeah.
And the lessons we see are Picard learning to play music with someone literally and symbolically.
Yeah. He did get music
learning
lessons.
To engage personally with his subordinates in a way he never has.
Yeah.
But the ending of the episode is, I was right all along. I need to be cold and aloof to protect myself.
Yeah.
And that makes it really hard to say this episode is about anything specifically because nobody learns any lessons.
Again, he learned the one major lesson that he is right. Yeah, right again.
He was right all along.
Yeah.
It's also like the 20th TNG episode that boils down to deal with your trauma.
Sure.
Since everything that happens this week gets tangled up in the inner light, and Picard clearly hasn't worked on that at all.
No, because he has to keep it the world's biggest secret, because he misunderstood what they wanted. Now I'm at the point where I think he must have misunderstood.
Where he thought the point of that whole thing was tell no one?
Tell no one about our society. No one must know of our ways.
We built the world's best video game for one person, tell no one. end of the day, I don't think there's a big takeaway here, so I gave it a 2.
Okay. Execution.
It's not that bad.
Okay.
The worst part is probably the meet cute in the opening, which seems very contrived.
Yes.
None of the conflict of interest business really pays off. And the choice to make this about music really complicates things because the music means something so unusual and specific to Picard that it links Nella Darren to this whole other life that he lost and also never really had, and no one else in the show recognizes that that's happening in any way.
Yeah. Yes.
But I do wonder if the writers may have thought about it a little, because the episode does contrast the sort of artificialness of trying to play 800-year-old European music on his flute to a computer backing track with when he's playing with a real person, and then he plays that folk melody from the planet.
Yeah.
So there's some contrast there. So maybe the writers thought about it a little, but no one else in the show realizes that's what's happening to Picard, including Nella Darren.
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing that leaves a bad taste in my mouth about this episode is that Picard hits one rough patch and just gives up.
Gives up
this woman
with extreme finality.
Yes.
He's like, no, this is all done. We're done.
This woman is going to move away and step back from maybe the pinnacle of her career so far, because Picard doesn't want to go to therapy or even just try again. And this could have been a step along Picard's arc of letting people into his life.
Yeah.
Like, we don't really know what happened, but prior to Jack Crusher's death, Picard, like, had friends.
Well, I mean, he knew Walker Keel.
Sure.
And Jack Crusher.
He had his academy buddies.
Oh, right.
And
yeah,
clearly
yeah.
He was friends with Jack Crusher, even though he was a subordinate or whatever.
Yeah.
But like something set him down this path so that when he gets to TNG, he's got a big stick up his butt and he's very lonely and isolated. And we know that at the end, last scene in TNG is him sitting down at the poker game, right? It's clearly meant to be like something has changed.
Right.
So this could have been a step along that arc, but instead everything had to be reset, and it left kind of a bad taste in my mouth. I've got it as a 4.
Looks like we're flipsy on this. You had a 2 and a 4, and I have a 4 and a 2.
Yeah,
right. I said, oh my god, this flirting is so sad and bad and wrong. Star Trek writers don't got any riz, man. Don't let them write flirting.
I think they're aware that Picard had got no riz.
Everything that was happening made me so sad.
Please remember that Star Trek writers also wrote Riker staring a woman dead in the face.
I thought I had. Was that part in front of Picard or just some of the
in
other
front of
parts?
His boss.
Okay.
Yeah, that part was in front of his boss. Yeah.
This episode threatens to become about a love triangle for a second, but then abandons it entirely to do something else about, like...
Oh, yeah. Beverly Crusher haunts this episode like a ghost.
But in the first half. It's all in the first half. She's like... She hears it from Picard at breakfast, and then she sees him drooling at the concert, and then she has to hear about them playing a duet in sickbay, and then, like... No, it's not about that. She's not in the episode anymore. It doesn't matter.
Yep.
That scene where Geordi hears music and Data looks at him like, all right, buddy, maybe you should get some sleep. And then you see the music stopped because of the world's most decrepit makeout. Was not good at all. And also I was like, why'd they put that shit in about Data thinking Geordi was crazy? That's just a fun bit or something.
Well, it's also weird, too, because Data's like, I hear music. And then the music stops and we can hear that it stops. And he's like, you don't hear that? And I'm like, no. It
even
stopped, man.
Even at home, we're going, Geordi, it stopped.
Geordi, it stopped.
Why can't
you're
you
gonna
hear
look
that?
Dumb now.
Yeah. I so badly wanted Picard to say, it's crazy that we don't have any guidelines for this when he's telling Nella over and over about how careful they have to be.
For sure.
He keeps telling her how careful, and I'm just like, that's so interesting.
There's such one throwaway line where he's like, now, I know there's no regulations that say a captain can't date one of his subordinates, and it's like, what?
Maybe there should be.
Maybe there should be.
Maybe you're experiencing right now why there should be, huh? Because of conflicts of interest and stuff. I did not care when this lady had seemingly eaten shit out there in the big fire. I don't know her. Picard only barely knows her.
Well, not only that, but they... Because they've decided already what Picard's ideal type is, and it's weirdly standoffish, and, you know, like...
Victorian?
He's lightly into being dominated. Very
sure.
Slightly.
Yeah, well,
so
only...
she's very
only...
condescending to him, which she's like, oh, let's go back to Frère Jacques. He's like, oh, I'm getting a tingle.
only in the extent to which he will allow her to touch him, so...
Yeah.
Just that's very slightly dominated.
Oh, because after the duet, what they were going to do in the turbo lift was they were going to go back to his quarters and he was going to put his balls through a hole in a wooden board and have her step on him.
He thought about it. Then that crewman walked in and it was all over.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. This episode is a miss for me. It's a no for me, dog. So, just a two.
What about world building?
Whatever that science experiment is in the beginning, that definitely didn't seem like science. It seemed like they were playing a game or something. They're like, no. Oh, no, hold on. Keep it on track. There you go. No, we almost got it. Okay, I think we're going to be... Oh, no! That's not how anyone has ever done science. What are you even doing?
They were just playing the Atari game F-14 Tomcat. That is fucking tricky land one. On a carrier at the end.
And it was a night landing, and they thought it'd be easier if all the lights were off in the room.
Just can't even be done. Like, you can watch a long play and it looks like it's possible, but it's hacked. Hacked somehow.
Yeah, that's not how it works. That game was actually not realistic because it was much harder than landing a real Tomcat, because it was just no fucking way to know where you were in the ocean.
Well, it's like a lot of times driving in a video game's harder than driving in real life too, right. You know?
Yeah. You're like, why can't I tell where I am? Why is this nothing? The Borgolis Nebula. Borgolis.
Yep.
That rollout piano made me very sad. They had Picard fake enthusiasm for it.
Hey,
I thought, were they going to sell these as toys or something? What is this?
They just had the props department make that, and no one in the props department knew how a piano was laid out.
Mm-mm.
And they just had to, like, they just went off the sketch that they got sent, and that the keys are, like, way too big. It's it would be impossible to play if it was real. Yeah.
It's not good, man.
I mean, also, they're all flat. There's lots of reasons that would be a shitty piano.
It's like Elcar's, but for a piano.
Yeah.
Also, all the notes are just mixed up. So, you know, you can't, there's no scales or anything. You just, random ones. Random keys make random sounds like Elcar's. Corellian tenors, like Arcturian Macbeths, they just blow people's minds.
Yes.
Once more, Picard explicitly states there are no rules against the crew just banging each other's brains out all day, regardless of who has more authority or whatever.
Yeah, we've just moved beyond it.
Yep, as you can see in this episode, we've moved beyond it.
It's like, I think we talked about this in the episode where Jake dated that Dabo girl, where I'm like, there just don't seem to be any rules. It's just like they just assume everybody's so well-adjusted in the future that they don't need any rules or protections of any kind.
No, because that was definitely Statch.
Yeah,
I think it was 1,000% Statch
in the future. And it's just like, yeah, every once in a while we're going to get it wrong, but that's the price of freedom.
Like, even teenagers, it don't matter. Everyone's an adult. Even the non-adults are adults.
Yeah.
Whatever the hell these firestorms are all about, I couldn't keep up. There were some firestorms. They took people by surprise. I don't know. 643 Bursalan colonists were down there. That's a small colony, but not one of their one-person science colonies.
No.
And then eight people fucking beefed it down there. I don't know if that's going to matter. I assume it's never going to matter, but...
You know. Well, I'm going to just put it this way. Nobody cares.
Nobody said
Picard
shit.
Picard is not broken up about the loss of eight of his crew people at all. In the next scene, he's just like, when I saw you in sickbay, I knew I could never put you in danger again.
How come she doesn't say, you know, eight people died? That'd be nice if she said that.
I was about to give up my flute playing forever, and then she doesn't go, eight people died, man.
Eight people died? I don't really give a fuck about your flute, man.
Can we not talk about this right now? Yeah. I knew all eight of them.
That's right. Those were all people that I interfaced with regularly. So, you know.
That new ensign I wanted in my department died.
But no, you're right, though. This is about you and your flute, you fucking child.
It would have been a real shame if you never played that shitty flute again.
That would have been a great way to end their relationship. I gave it a two. I don't know.
It's not a lot. I mean, I have even one less. It's, like you said, there's no rule that says a chimp can't play football, I guess. I don't think the firestorms are world building. Maybe there's a little bit in here about how shipboard assignments and department transfers work, but they don't dig into it.
No, it's the same as always. It's just it all goes through Riker, and we all just have to assume it's because he's not qualified for anything else.
I mean, it's that or Picard just doesn't want to do it. This is just a job Picard doesn't want to do, right?
Yeah, he definitely does not. He don't want to know any of the crew, and he doesn't want anyone to come to him with crew problems. He's made that very clear.
Yeah. Yeah, he has. So it's just a one for me on world building.
All right. Now, what this episode was all about. Character work.
Yeah, this one is tough because a lot of time is the guest of the week this week.
Yeah.
Remember when Riker called together the mutiny squad because Picard sang a drinking song in 10 Forward?
Oh, I do remember that.
But now he could be like, you and I should do fencing, and Riker's just worried that his ship daddy's going to like his new girlfriend better.
Yep. Yeah.
I guess that shows that Picard has already loosened up enough that everyone can accept human behavior from him, or it's inconsistent writing. I guess one of those two.
Well, as always, it's one of them.
Yeah. They didn't give Beverly a lot this week, but as usual, Gates is one of the only people doing acting on this show. So when she says, I wasn't aware he played duets, there's a lot there for us to
see. There's so much. And we, by the way, we are all aware he does not play duets.
Yeah.
You don't have to say, don't phrase it that way. Phrase it this way. I was very aware that he doesn't do duets is the way you should phrase it.
I don't think he takes too many solos, if you ask me.
Nah, he's pretty afraid of the whole thing. That's all too much for him.
This is like the fifth time this season Picard has called Troy in to talk about personal stuff. And somehow I like to see it every time.
Sure.
Because it's like, he should know he's damaged.
Yeah, man, he didn't just live that whole life. Like he got the Cardassian torture.
Yes, when he nods at her at the end of Chains of Command Part 2, you're like, oh good, he's going to address it.
Yeah.
But Picard's a quitter. He knew giving orders would be hard, and it was hard, and he's had enough.
Yeah.
And he's just not going to try this anymore.
He's done.
Even though he fell in love with this woman instantly.
Yeah.
So it's real mixed bag for him, and this is mostly his show. I couldn't do higher than a 3 for characterization on this.
Yep. Picard tells Data he's going to do some work on his own. Like, and then I said, like, captain stuff? Nah, dumb archaeology stuff.
Nope.
That's not work,
He's probably going to work on an impossible orbiter Fermat's last theorem. You know, the stuff Starfleet pays him to do.
That's not work, man. You got a job. That's not work. That's boredom. Just read Wikipedia aimlessly like the rest of us and go to bed. Picard knows not to tell Beverly right away that he got this tea blend from that poodle-haired bitch.
Uh-huh.
Yo, the way he becomes so cold when that crewman walks in on them.
Yes.
This virgin turd.
Oh, just, by the way, I'm not saying it was poorly acted. I think Patrick Stewart was doing a very good job of getting this awkward man across.
Yep, he's a virgin turd for sure. And then I said, the great video game makers of the cosmos will be happy that Picard finally told one person about that lifetime he lived in VR. But he definitely made it seem like a big secret again, so I don't think she'll tell anybody else about it. So, still nobody will know of their ways. Picard immediately tries to sacrifice some peon to the firestorms when Riker tries to send his lady down there.
Yes.
Jesus, man, I know you've never been there, but, like, act like you've been there? A little bit. Riker doesn't want to deal with Picard's fucking girlfriend, and I get it, but he just needs to beef up and tell her, nah, man, hit the bricks, sister, instead of going to his dad about it.
Yeah, this is not something that he should really have trouble with.
No.
Like, he was perfectly happy to bite off Shelby's head.
Yeah, you should tell this lady to get lost, and if Picard's got a problem with it, he can be like, hey man, this is your problem. Yeah. I did my thing, and this is only a problem because you got a girlfriend now, or whatever. The only person I felt bad for at any point in this episode was Riker, because he for sure thought he sent Picard's girlfriend to her death.
Oh yeah.
When he's in sick bay.
He was like, yeah, the last time I saw her, she was with the SEAL Team 6, so.
That's gonna damage their relationship, for sure.
Do you still want to go fencing? Do you still Hey, do you want to do ambojitsu? I could teach you ambojitsu.
It'd be great if we'd asked him, do you still want to go fencing? As, hey, it zooms in on Picard's worried face.
Hey, I watched some fencing videos. It does seem like it could be fun. So if you want to do that, we could still go fencing.
Some time suddenly freed up on your calendar.
Hey, I replicated one of those fencing masks. So if you wanted to do that, I even put it in the locker next to yours. I made that bald guy move his.
Yeah, but mine's got devil horns on it. It looked cooler.
Yeah, it's actually pretty much just my ambojutsu gear.
I replicated the motocross helmet.
Yeah,
looks good on me.
Not my dad's. His didn't fit, but mine looked.
This is the ultimate evolution of martial arts. I say to you, my son, who I've fought hundreds of times, presumably, but I'm going to tell you now. This is something. Maybe I've always wanted to tell you this, and I never felt like I could. But now I'm going to tell you. This is the ultimate evolution.
Listen,
of martial
arts. New religions, new martial arts are a little nutty. It's possible that it is part of the fucking formula. You have to say Anbojutsu, the ultimate evolution in martial arts.
And you say that part in English, but all the rules are Japanese.
Yeah.
But he says that to his own son. They're alone in there. Oh, God. That's perfect. That's a perfect scene. Beverly is subtly jealous in this one, which I enjoyed, but it ain't about that.
No, they don't really engage with it at all.
So I gave it a 4.
All right. It's 22, so that would have won the week last week. But yeah.
They had a lot of bad weeks lately where a 22 might have won.
Yeah, I mean... nope, but no, the last week of 22 would have won before last week was week 132 with Rascals.
The Rascals got a 10, but also the week before that. Okay, I got some quick ones.
Oh, I'd love to have them.
Yo, this bitch's hair looks like she meant to get the Cranston, but there was a picture of a dog next to the one she should not. And whoops, fucking poodle hair, dude. Bitch looks like a fancy poodle. The whole time I was watching her, I was like, she wanted the Cranston.
She did.
That cutaway from the pianist's hands to Nella Darren playing was so sloppy.
Oh, yeah.
Also,
yeah, there's a lot of that.
Hey, man, this lady isn't some great actress. She wasn't like some unbelievable pull that you were able to get. Oh my God, this actress is on the show. Just hire a pianist, man. She's going to play the piano 500 times in this episode.
I mean, this woman did have a lot of words.
I'm just saying, it'll be easier just hire someone who knows how to play the piano than to have to replicate someone else's hands over and over and over again. Speaking of which, look at those Hanna-Barbera hands on Picard. Did you see how it was very clearly someone else's hands? When he's playing in his quarters, the hands get all big and the ankles all wrong. Like, he'd have to have his elbows way out in front of him and the hands bending back toward him. Just like when Space Ghost is trying to use that telephone. He wasn't doing anything so complex with that flute that he needed someone else. Someone was laying between his legs with their hands up in the air in his face.
Yeah.
That, I laughed so... And I've never noticed it before, but seeing it in high def was like, oh, fuck.
That is part of the joy of watching it in high def, and it is one of the reasons why it's a real shame that DS9 and Voyager never got up-resed.
So many moments like that we've been missing because they're so shitty, even on even streaming now. Oh, I laughed so hard when I noticed it was someone else's hands. A few little streaks of soot on this lady's face to show how scary dangerous those storms are.
Oh, I know. She almost burned to death, and one of the guys with her did burn right to death. But yeah,
she got two little streaks or something.
She got a little sweaty, you know?
Yeah. what about you?
There must have been an announcement about taking all these systems offline, right? Did Picard just... not read, he just doesn't read the announcements, right?
No, man, he doesn't believe he needs to do that. He is the captain of this ship, and he thinks he's going to go up there and say, I want to make that call, and Data's just going to cut off that experiment and make that call. He's never even supposed to hear about that experiment. He's probably mad at Data that Data told him about it.
Yeah, well, listen, man, first of all, if you if you want someone who's going to break the rules on the night shift, you give the night shift to Chief O'Brien.
That's right. That'd be crazy up there. Chief whatever officer. Like,
why is Chief O'Brien always running the night shift?
I don't think he's allowed to.
I got to say that Picard gets a surprising amount of stuff done during the night shift. And I think having his fixer on the bridge might be part of the reason.
Yeah, but he's like not even an officer. How does this work? Hey,
I don't know, man, but we've jettisoned 5 pods this week during Condition Yellow. That's all I'm going to say about it. Yeah, you think all those transfers are normal?
That's who you would get to do it, too. And someday it's all going to come back to roost for fucking O'Brien.
Uh-huh.
Will he stay quiet, though? We don't know.
I guess if Picard didn't like patronizing women, the whole Beverly Crusher thing would have been a non-starter.
Yeah.
But Nella Darren talks to him like he's 6 years old, and it ain't for me.
I mean, he is just a big dumb child where a relationship is concerned, for sure.
Yeah, but like, when she tells him, after they play Frère Jacques, what she tells him,
you're better than you think you are. Like, look, lady, like, huh. I was already pretty embarrassed. I am now mortified. I am putting this flute away.
Remind me, are you the ship's music teacher? Or are you the stellar cartographer who just happens to play the piano okay?
Yeah.
You did a good job in Data's little trio.
That's right.
You know who used to be in that? O'Brien. Did you know he was a cellist?
Yeah, he's kind of not. So, you see what I'm saying?
Maybe you would like to critique me during life drawing class also. You follow Data around and tell me about my inappropriate style.
He did find it inappropriate. That's the adjective I should use whenever I don't like something from now on. I'm just going to say I find it inappropriate.
Well, like if something's not at the right height.
Well, that's not normal. That's different. That's okay. A much worse thing, which is called not normal.
I give best actor to Picard and worst actor to Big Will Riker.
Okay.
So, congratulations to them this week.
All right.
Next two. In the order is Voyager. Yeah. This week we watched Unimatrix Zero Part 1.
Thank you, as always, for keeping those messy opening notes before you play the theme.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Open on so many Borgs. Cubes and spheres and drones and all of that shit. It's Borg City up in here.
Yeah, man, that's the Unicomplex.
Yeah, and look, there's the Borg Queen, too. The idea that ruined the Borg. She's here.
It really is the idea that ruined the Borg.
Yeah, the whole point was that they had a combined consciousness, that they were all together, one consciousness. But then the movie came along and they were like, no, but also they got a boss.
Well, a collective consciousness can't seduce Data. A collective consciousness doesn't have cleavage.
That's right. That's what Jonathan Frakes said. The Queen tells an individual Borg.
And they didn't let him write that movie, did they?
I have no idea.
I know he directed it, but like...
That just seems like a Frakes note to me. The Queen tells an individual Borg, you, not we, have a disease, and I'm going to cleanse you, or whatever.
Yeah.
Then she asks for the interlink frequency that binds him with the others like him. And she cuts him off from the hive mind as punishment, and he says he doesn't know or remember the frequency, and she has him disassembled so she can study his cortical array. Credits.
Yeah, he says, don't worry, he says I a bunch of times, too. If you're mad about the you, the I's in there, too, a bunch.
Yeah, no, they're all individuals. It don't matter. Seven.
Well, this is the show where they fucking take orders out loud on a tannoy and then walk over and do them.
It's true. That happens. And also, they hunt each other for sport sometimes.
Well, that happens, yeah.
Seven is hanging in an idyllic forest with aliens of all kinds. A guy calls her by her human name, Annika, and reaches out to her, but she wakes up in the cargo bay. It was a dream. Doctor says it's just a dream. Good for you. Dreams are the best. That's what he says. Meanwhile, TP is late to the bridge by 22 seconds, and everyone mean mugs him, but it's just a fun prank. He's getting demoted. And he's gonna be a lieutenant again. I don't know how or why. He sucks so bad every week. Is this because of all the good stuff he did on the holodeck that time? When we almost got burned to death?
It's a very good question.
Anyway. Then they pick up a distress signal from an asteroid 2 light-years away. And they go to investigate and they find a colony. It looks burned out, though. And nobody picks up the phone. They detect Borg weapon signatures, and they find the cube responsible at the far edge of the system or whatever. So they hightail it out of there with just a quick log explaining it was too late for these turds.
Do they, would you say they hightail it out of there? Because they do only leave at warp 6.
It's almost like they leave at a speed that won't really make the Borg suspicious.
Yeah, I guess when the Borg see someone going at warp 6, they're like, that's not even fucking worth it. Warp 6?
Nothing. Yeah, that's nothing to me.
Come on. I'm not stopping to assimilate that.
I think it's pure psychology. She's like, we don't want to make it seem like we're running away. Just go at a regular ass speed.
Take like us we're out just nonchalantly.
Yeah, exactly. Casually get us out of the system. Seven goes back into the Dreamland Forest, and the same guy from before tells her, this is Unimatrix Zero. And he says, there's a shop and an inn, and also the Elder wants to see you. Big news about those monsters you saw at the bridge. He gives his Borg designation, but then he says just to call him Axum. His mom called him Axum, I guess. I don't know. He suggests her memories will come back to her. They meet a boy who just got there when his ship got Borged. The guy says, this is a virtual game called Second Life, and he's running for boy mayor.
He's running for boy mayor.
Their bodies are all elsewhere. Only 1 in 12 Borg drones can even get here because of reasons. And she used to come here a lot before she left the Collective. And then he says the Collective knows how to find them, and 200 of them have been wiped. And soon they're going to find the interlink frequency, and Second Life will shut down for good. He needs someone to release a thing into the Collective to mask the biochemical signature of those freaks who can get to Second Life. It's up to her, again, for reasons. Later, a Klingon with a Nausicaan tooth is real mad that she has been brought here. He says she's putting everybody at risk, and everyone shames him into leaving. And then Seven bumps into some old friends she kind of remembers, and the guy says she spent 18 years there. Then he wakes up from his cycle and disappears from Second Life. And Seven approaches the senior staff with this mission to infiltrate a Borg cube and give them the thing that the guy said before. But Janeway wants to chat with the people in Second Life first, and Tuvok, as always, volunteers to do a mind meld while Seven is asleep.
But a cool new three-way mind meld that he just invented.
Yeah, Janeway shouts down the doctor's objections, and then I said, oh wait, this is no simple mind meld, this is the bridging of minds. It's different in ways that aren't important, so don't ask. Janeway finds herself in the dumb forest with Annika, who is dressed in a nasty Federation casual wear, and her hair is done up. Yeah, then adult Marissa, and her fucking hair is done up, and her Borg bits are missing. Meanwhile, the Borg Queen thinks she's getting closer to cracking this thing. She does get the frequency, but she can't shut fucking Second Life down still. So she says, well, they'll just also go to Second Life. I don't know why she thinks that's a good idea. I mean, what if anybody she sends in there gets their original consciousness back? And she doesn't think about it. Anyway. Janeway wants the Borgs in Second Life to become the Resistance, like she was when she was on the holodeck that one time.
Yeah.
But during our
chat, she's gone for 8 minutes and she's going to pitch a resistance to them.
They're like, no, we need your help to go do a thing. And she's like, how about this, though? You take on all the responsibility and we leave at warp 6.
What if everybody did a suicide mission?
But during our chat, the Borg attack. They're just drones who do drone stuff in there. So how does Second Life work? I don't know. They can, like, assimilate people in there, even? Beats me, man.
Yeah, and once they do, the Borg Queen knows where they are in real life.
Yep, it's now, yeah, it is Dream Warriors now. It's become Nightmare on Elm Street fucking 3 or whatever.
Yeah.
Lots of people get got, but Janeway saves that nasty Klingon from earlier.
Yeah, his name is Korok, like in the Zelda games.
Sure, Korok, the Nausicaan tooth Klingon. Even though she's acting via mind meld, she still whips Borg ass. But whoops, the Borg Queen sees Janeway in there. Again, she's not even really in there. And she sees her via fucking Borg body cam.
Yep.
So that's scary.
It is weird that the Borg can see Janeway, who is being mind melted in. Yeah.
Why did she even think that would work? Why did she think she'd be able to talk to the Borgs in there?
I don't know.
But it works. It's fine. Janeway gets back without any ill effects, so good for Tuvok. He did a good job. She tells Chaco about her plan to help the Resistance, and she asks for his help, and he happily agrees. He forgot all that other stuff from before, about the Borgs and everything. They come up with a dumbass plan to infiltrate a cube and mess with a central plexus.
Yeah.
They identify a ship, but Seven says it's too beefy to infiltrate. Janeway doesn't care about that objection either. Axum gives Seven a status update about Klingons and Hirogens fighting drones in Second Life. And they observe some drones in the forest, and then Seven and Axum do makeouts. I guess they were lovers, he says, for like 6 years?
Yeah.
Hopefully it was the last 6 years, because she was a kid for a lot of her time in Second Life. Anyway.
Yeah, she's only 27, so.
Seven gets freaked out and goes back to First Life.
Yes.
Janeway is Archer again this week and says it's her job to infiltrate. So, eat it, everybody. Maybe that makes her Sisko. I don't know. There are a lot of these captains with weird delusions of grandeur.
Yeah, Picard would send someone, but not someone important.
No. Not someone important to him. Personally. Yeah, right. Someone whose name he didn't bother to learn. Tuvok and B'Elanna insist on coming along. Because Janeway refuses, but Chaco talks her into allowing it, and since I play timelines, I remember what happens to them.
That's true.
Then the Borg Queen forces a communication signal, and she offers to help Voyager get home quickly if they help her with the Freaks of Second Life. She wants that raucous party shut down, because, you know, they rented that condo from her in Second Life.
Yes.
They promised they weren't going to throw a raucous party.
But then they did.
Too many people came right away and messed up at the servers. Then when she hangs up, she says she'll see Harry very soon.
Yeah, it's an extremely weird threat.
But even Harry Kim doesn't seem worried enough about that. He just goes, no. What does that mean? What? I'd be like, oh, I'm gonna take a few days off. I'm done with this. Teepee and B'Elanna have a farewell. I was gonna say a sweet farewell, but with these two, you know. They get to their target. It's a Borg cube, but like in Klingon armor or something. It's dumb. They call it a tactical cube. It's a stupid idea. Janeway and Chaco hold hands, and then it's go time.
Yeah.
Seven goes back into Second Life to coordinate, but also makes sure to let Axum know she ain't got any feelings for him at all, so he can eat shit.
Yeah, it's very important to her at this moment to break up with him.
Mm-hmm. She didn't even know they were dating, but she is definitely breaking up with him.
Yeah.
Voyager takes a beating, but it gets the Borg's shields messed up enough for an infiltration via the Delta Flyer. Oh no, the Delta Flyer's destroyed, but only after the successful transport of the crew to the cube. And as they make their way toward the plexus, the Queen watches. The Borg quickly adapt to the phasers, and Voyager gets mega-fucked. Infiltration team is captured and assimilated. Things look so very dark, but this is a heist movie, and Chaco says, so far, so good.
Yeah.
And gets out of dodge with the ship. So the three infiltrators are now drones. Oh no, to be continued.
Are you interpreting all the symbols? Searching your subconscious for their meaning?
Not my job. You do it.
I am afraid that all I have is a cynical take here.
Okay.
Which is, it's easy to do the right thing when it also gives you a chance to strike at an old enemy.
Okay, and that was the right thing helping these dummies?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because there's the conference room scene where Seven says, we stop for every distress call. We stopped for one this week where we didn't even get a message in the distress call.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, good point, good point. But then in Janeway's private session with Chakotay, the whole discussion seems to hinge on turning the tide of the Borg War.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem so high-minded anymore.
And that's true.
And Janeway dropping back in on Axum to say, okay, now all of you are going to wake up disoriented and you need to play it cool, really undercuts the idea that she's doing any of this for them. So again, left a bad taste in my mouth. I gave it a 2.
I couldn't come up with anything.
Okay.
If it's a 7 episode, what does it say about her? That she had this old life she totally forgot and is kind of mad about the whole thing with Axum? I don't know. I couldn't think of anything. If it's a Janeway episode, what does it say about her that she's willing to fuck with the Borg to help these people? I don't know. I mean, helping people who are oppressed is great, especially if it harms your mortal enemy, I wrote. Yeah, no shit. That would be a 1-point take. I'll stick with the no take, is what I said.
Oh, okay, I'll play it.
It doesn't mean anything. I have been studying it for 7 days. I had the computer analyze it. I swear to you, it does not mean a thing.
Yeah, that's right. And everybody...
It's a shame we never got him in Star Trek, huh?
I know. We got Katsulas a couple times, but yeah, it would have been great to get Jurassic in there. And if anybody cares, Yerk rhyme with Kirk.
Has started his Babylon 5 watch, clearly.
Someone bought him Babylon 5, and now he's watching it, and he's pointing out all the props that have been used in both Babylon 5 and Star Trek.
It is mainly prop reuses, but honestly, that's kind of his focus, so it's not surprising.
Yeah, that's exactly what he would do. He's not done or anything. He's still only in, like, season 4 or something of TNG.
Yes.
He'll never, ever be done. All right, execution. Second Life is a kind of a dumb premise. 1/12 of Borg can go there. Do 1/12 miss? Sorry.
You clearly have misheard. It's 1 in 1,000,000.
Oh, I thought you said 1/12.
No.
Oh, well, that's better then, because I was going to say...
12th would be huge.
I was going to say, do 1/12 necessarily go there? Because even though 1/12 sounds like a small fraction, how many millions or billions of Borgs would that be? A lot, right?
No, it's 1 in 1,000,000, and that's why they think they're probably going to be the only one on their cube when they wake up.
Ah, that's so... Okay, that's so fucking weird. I thought for sure they said 12. Okay.
When you said 1 in 12 earlier, I thought, I don't get that reference. Because it is 1 in a million.
Why is Seven mad about Axum revealing they used to do virtual sex? Just because he didn't come out with it right away? I wasn't clear.
I guess she thinks he should have let off with that, but that would have been a real weird move.
I feel like he kind of played that right.
Well, you didn't remember, so...
I wasn't just going to be like, by the way, we fucked 100 times in here.
Hey, this is going to come up at some point. I just want to get ahead of it.
Seems like she's really just mad she doesn't remember, and she's taking it out on him, I guess. I don't know. But as with the rest of the episode, it was not clear, man. It's a heist movie, I guess. Chaco reveals that in the end. Dream sequences are a major plot device in this one. Curious what you think about that. This whole Second Life business.
Well, they're not dreams, so I couldn't technically.
Yeah. Why is B'Elanna so worked up about this mission? She didn't even want to do it at first, and now she insists on risking her life. Like, why? Anything? Yep. Gonna tell us anything?
Tom Paris got promoted, and she was like,
I'm never gonna hear the end of this.
Yeah, he's gonna think he deserves stuff.
He's probably gonna say, "You should blow me because I deserve it," just like Mel Gibson. Finally, I didn't think the episode was even trying to be about anything. It was just setting up a big showdown in part two, so it wasn't great. I gave it a 3.
Listen, man, I liked it even one less. I gave it a 2. Okay. The idea of the Unimatrix itself could maybe have been interesting, but it's extremely contrived that Seven spontaneously rejoins them at the exact moment of their greatest peril.
Yep, that is some TV writing for sure.
Yeah.
If they were a modern show and they could just fucking weave these things in, she would have been visiting there for like 19 episodes trying to figure out what it was.
Yeah, she would have just had a dream. That dream where someone called her Annika would have been 6 episodes ago, and we would have been like, I wonder what that's setting up.
Oh, they're setting something. Oh, go to the message boards. Let's see what people think.
Yeah. The Borg Queen was a bad idea in First Contact and a bad idea in Voyager, and now she's comically bad. Just muttering Janeway under her breath and making vague, unmotivated threats toward Harry Kim, of all people.
Her true nemesis, Harry Kim. You didn't know that, but that's what's happening.
we don't, as far as I can tell, we don't learn anything about why Seven is so comfortable being Annika in there in her second visit. Like, I know she's told she was there for 18 years and very important to those people, but she doesn't seem to remember it. Yeah. Even though the people who are in there do remember their nightly visits, even though they don't during the day.
Yeah.
Yep. So we don't know quite what anything means to her, which I know is a character note, but it's a glaring problem with the execution of this episode.
Yep. There was nothing in this episode that was really clear.
But the real head scratcher for me is that they pretend that Janeway's plan is to reach the central plexus. Then they show her getting assimilated, which is classic cliffhanger business. But then Chakotay is chuckling to himself on the bridge and saying, so far, so good.
Yeah, are we not supposed to be worked up over the break?
Yeah, no? Don't worry about it, guys. Don't think about it at all. Everyone have a cool summer. Don't think about it in any way. We already told you everything is going according to plan.
It is a baffling choice, for
what
sure.
What a lousy way to end the season.
Like, they were like, oh, like, people will be all mad because it's just like the way Best of Both Worlds ended, maybe. Maybe that's what they were thinking. Like, oh, people will be like, oh, this is just a redo of Best of Both Worlds or whatever.
But it's not, because Best of Both Worlds ends with Riker giving the order to kill Picard.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, it doesn't end with Picard being it. But anyway, it doesn't matter, right? It's just like, you don't have to do a cliffhanger at the end of every season, but, like, if you're going to do one, don't undercut it.
Yeah, it is very odd. It's super odd.
So, just a two for me.
Yeah. World building, then.
Mind melds give you headaches.
Sometimes.
Yeah. We've got tactical cubes. We've got Unimatrix Zero, of course.
Am I right that was just a regular Borg cube in Klingon armor? What the hell was happening with
I mean,
that?
It definitely seemed to have armor plating, but I think it was bigger than a regular cube.
Stupid.
Anyway, they're harder to find in Star Trek Online. I know that.
There you go.
Lots of little stuff. This is like the fourth or fifth episode about dissent in the Borg ranks, though.
Yeah.
So I don't know why we're supposed to think these guys can possibly accomplish anything new that Hugh's people didn't, or that weird collective that assimilated Chakotay, or any of the other Borgs that have escaped and become individuals.
Seven herself.
It's like, it's always the same story. Hey, we met some Borgs that don't want to be Borgs anymore. Okay.
Yeah.
You gonna do something with it this time?
Not really. We're gonna adopt them. That's like we did earlier in the season.
Yeah. What about you for world building?
Unimatrices, in case they haven't come up before. I couldn't remember. It sounds like in the real world we'd call it conspiracy, but the Queen calls it a disease among the Borg. Second life in the Great Forest. The freaks get their own thoughts back and shit when they're in there, but normies are still drones in there, maybe. Anyway, the Queen's trying to crush it. Is this the same Borg Queen, or just, like, a new one who has the same job? I don't even know how she works.
Yep, we don't. She has a little bit in here where she's talking. For some reason, neither one of us have brought it up to this point, but for some reason, this episode is, like, full of gory disembodied heads that she's talking to, like, her fucking shadow cabinet. She's like,
very important.
It's
we
a
know
shame
she's a
you didn't
guy.
Survive. Your disembodied to be disembodied is the ultimate goal of the Borg.
Then she like rubs her nips. You're like, what is fucking happening?
It's
here?
Like, who are you?
I know.
Yeah, and it's very confusing because they did recast the Borg Queen from First Contact to the last time we saw her.
That one in particular beefed it. So like, what is she? What even is she?
Yes. Exactly. And by the way, although this is the same one as the last time we saw on Voyager, I do know that the previous one from First Contact does come back for the last time we see her in Voyager. So,
yeah, great. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
The bridging of minds, the central plexus. Is that like a vinculum?
Or is it different? Well, I mean, yeah. It's a good question.
From a vinculum? I don't know.
We never see it, so we don't know if it looks the same as the vinculum.
I wouldn't have remembered anyway.
I just assume it's a kind of glowing green octahedron or something.
Yeah, that makes sense. If you can dream up batleths and shit in Second Life, why can't everyone dream up whatever weapon they want?
Yeah, it should be a real bad time for the Borg when they get in there.
They should just get in there and be fucking annihilated by all the cool weapons they dreamed up with their dream minds. Because, like, there's no reason there should be batlets in there.
It's just dragons that eat Borg in there.
It's crazy. Bad. They love them. So delicious to them.
They can smell them from miles away, and they love to chomp them. Also, they're fucking dragons, so good luck with your little arm.
That's right. Yeah, it's very strange that some of them had weapons and some didn't. Just
well, they're saying stuff now. Like the Korok is giving all the Klingons batlets.
What? Yeah, where'd he get them? Did he dream them up? Because then, like, dream up some better weapons. Dream up a fucking chain gun or something.
Uh-huh. Hey, if you dream it all up, put Arnold in there to wield it.
That's right, exactly. They all dreamed up an Arnold. It was crazy. There were so many of them in there.
This is a very jungle-like location. Put 50 Rambos in there.
They were all just shouting. There were fucking Arnolds from the Predator and fucking Rambos all just shouting over each other and murdering people. It was amazing. Yeah,
just killing anything in black leather. Anything with abs. Kill anything with abs.
That's right. You see abs on it, and, you know, there was some friendly fire because of that note.
Yeah, don't kill all the Rambos. Yeah, I know about the abs on the Rambos. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, just
anything with abs and no headband.
Yeah, anything with black abs. Carl Weathers was not dreamed up, so all the black abs, just shoot them. Yeah, two. Nothing good going on in there, really.
Characterization, then.
The Doctor believes dreams are just, like, metaphors and have hidden meanings.
Oh, yeah. Because he's a fucking absolute quack when it comes to anything with the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So he definitely is excited to do some dream analysis for Seven.
They didn't do a good job with him at all.
Probably going to find some fucking repressed memories in there, too.
Yeah, again.
Push her to prosecute.
Oh, God. And then in the end, he offers to turn himself off. TP was promoted for some reason. That's just a super confusing thing that happened in this episode. Seven seems to have, like, more emotions in the dream forest. Smiles and comforts kids and stuff and gets pissy with this guy.
Oh, yeah. They take another opportunity in this one to let us know that because Seven is a lady, she's got very maternal feelings. Yes, just like they assumed she would in the Borg Babies episode.
Yep, that's right.
It'll come to you. You got a uterus, I think. I don't know what the doctor put in there.
You got a human uterus, I assume. Janeway wants to help the Borgs in Second Life. That's all I got for Janeway. Chaco's all in on this plan to help the fucking Zeros, and he and Janeway hold some hands a little bit before
she leaves. That was an interesting little scene that didn't... didn't come from anywhere, and it didn't go anywhere, but it was an interesting little thing in there.
Maybe they still care about this relationship? I don't know. Tuvok can do a new trick this week, and he also insists on going to the cube with Janeway. B'Elanna also insists on going to the cube with Janeway, even though she was not into helping these dudes earlier in the episode, so that seems unmotivated. You know, I wrote a 4, but that feels like a 2.
Mm.
I didn't understand any of what happened in this episode. Mm-mm.
Well, I did also give it a 2, so there's not gonna be a lot of argument coming from me over here.
Yeah, that sounds like a 2 to me.
7 of 9 has consistently rejected the identity of Annika Hansen.
Yeah.
On a couple of occasions, Janeway has ordered her to think about her parents, to engage with her past in any way.
Yep.
But this week she's taken with the idea for some reason, and she shows up when they tell her you can be anything here. She shows up there as Annika, even when she brings Janeway in.
Yeah, she doesn't go back to being Seven. Yeah.
But then when she finds out she had a relationship in there, she suddenly gets cold and tells him, my name is 7 of 9.
Yes.
It could be interesting if it was examined in any way, but it isn't.
Yeah, in Star Trek, things happening is the same as character work.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Janeway goes to Chakotay and says she wants his support on this. And then later tells him she was hoping for unconditional support. She also goes to these terrified individuals who are losing their dream world and their identity and immediately starts trying to enlist them in a rebellion against a force a million times their size. And I already mentioned that it seems like her motivation in this is in this rescue mission is to strike at the Borg, which is very cynical and bad.
Yeah.
They give Tom Paris a scene where he's like, I would even give up my brand new promotion that I didn't care about if it would mean that you were safe.
So, yep.
I do like you this week.
I hated it. I hated watching that scene because I knew they weren't going to be sweet, and they weren't, and I didn't like it.
Chakotay takes Janeway's hand on the bridge. There's some little stuff for other people to do, but it's mainly Janeway and Seven, as always.
Yeah.
Oh, but I already mentioned that I think the Borg Queen is a big miss, and I guess she's a character at this point. So,
factor her in here too. I didn't really know what to say about her because I don't know what she is.
It is going to be a 2 out of me.
Okay. All right. Well, then what about the
Quick Ones? That's only a 15. That ain't great.
No, that's not a good score.
Yeah. I wrote, is it even your first dream if your dad's not a blacksmith in it?
This is a good question.
Yeah.
Also, she's had dreams before. She's had like 7 dreams before. We've seen them.
The doctor gives her an REM sleep monitor and does not tell her why. And we later learn that it's so he could confirm that she wasn't dreaming. But I said, this lady already has to sleep standing in heels. She does not need another thing to attach to her head at night.
It's true. They don't let her get into like some nice footy pajamas or anything.
I've got more shit for you to put on at night.
That's right.
Here you go.
I know on this one side you got all this Borg shit, but this one on the other side.
Then it turns out they only have one joke on this ship. Pretend to be mad at a celebration.
Yeah, they've done this a few fucking times.
It's the exact same shit she did basically 2 or 3 weeks ago on Tuvok's birthday.
True. She was so disappointed in him or whatever, and he was a little bit confused. And she's like, fucking gotcha.
Happy birthday, idiot.
It's a cake, but dildo. I don't know how replicators work. I think I burned it.
Also, did Chakotay make the little wooden box that the Pip came in? Does he miss building wooden bathtubs and shit? And he's just like, he does a lot of carving in his bedroom.
Yeah. Well, you know, the farther he gets away from where his ancestors' dead bones are or whatever.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The more he wants to do those kinds of hobbies. All great space aliens of the cosmos who came to visit my people once upon a time. I'm far away from my ancestors' dead old bones and blue butt cheeks and everything.
Harry Kim asks where his goddamn rank Pip is, and I said, fucking A right. This dude takes the night shift on the bridge. He's in command of the whole ship on the night shift. Also, never been demoted or jailed.
Nope.
He, by all rights, he should be way ahead of Tom Paris in terms of seniority. Is he not getting promoted because he's from the alternate universe and so he's kind of not supposed to even be here?
Yeah, I mean, that's one theory for sure. What I was going to say was the reason they de-demote Tom Paris and they've never promoted Harry Kim is that water finds its own level, and Harry Kim has made himself subordinate to Tom Paris in every part of their relationship. He just always follows him around doing whatever Tom Paris says is cool.
Okay,
and everyone notices that. Everyone has noticed.
By that logic, they should promote 7 of 9 to be a full commander because she's clearly second in command on this ship.
They don't need to. Everyone already just does whatever she says.
I guess that's true. What does she need the rank pips for?
She doesn't need
it. Also, where would she put them?
Yeah, exactly. Just right on her butt cheeks.
I was kind of hoping Seven would dream about the captain of the Equinox or whatever standing on some beach in white linen.
Yeah, exactly.
That would have, turnabout would have been fair play.
I had a very pleasant dream when those aliens were eating his bones and everything.
Hey, Voyager writers, you can't have a guy named Axum welcome Seven to the jungle. You can't do that.
I hadn't thought about it.
Axum.
Yeah, that's true.
You can look however you want there in Unimatrix Zero. And Korok chose those eyes and teeth.
I saw that tooth. I was like, what the what are the props people doing? What are the costume and makeup people doing this week? What is this supposed to be?
We have a note. We have a note from the director here that just says outpost tooth. Do you know what that means?
I think it means like one sticks way out. Is that what he means? Yeah. All right.
You want to maybe give him a big fang?
I guess that's what he's got.
What if he had the worst Klingon teeth ever and he was also very wall-eyed?
Couldn't believe it.
Man, I'm not saying that Spock couldn't have done a mental bridge between Kirk and McCoy, or Kirk and an android, or even Kirk and, like, one of those Lexan engineering clubs.
Sure.
It just feels like the season 6 finale of Voyager is a little late to be making up new stuff Vulcans can do.
It's just, they always do it, though. Every time we see a Vulcan, they got a new power. I don't know what they're like the Borg Queen, man. I don't know what they are or how they work.
Yeah, like, it's not inconsistent. Spock was able to do telepathy through a wall at a guy one time.
He controlled him and moved him over and opened the door. It didn't even matter. They got captured 3 more times in that episode.
They did. But it's like, yeah, they just make some new shit up that Tuvok can do. No way in the world Schmullis would call this the bridging of heads, except to be an asshole, but I guess that tracks.
Yeah, exactly. That was not accidental.
Janeway takes Korok's Batleth, and she gives, like, 3 good uppercuts to a Borg guy's face, and the guy doesn't even get a cut.
No.
This dude didn't even imagine a sharp Batleth for himself. I think this is just not one club. Of the braver Klingons we've encountered.
No.
He's like, I do have one, but it's not sharp.
It sucks. It sucks
I,
like
my
bad,
I have a shitty Batleth, just like in real life.
In real life, I don't even have this nasty tooth. I just thought it up in here.
Dude's fucking bummed out that he got assimilated because that's not honorable or something. And he's like, I suck, and my Batleth sucks.
It happens a lot with Batleths in Star Trek. You just hit people with them and they just fall down. No one ever gets any wounds.
The only way you can kill someone with a Batleth is if you hit them with the actual horn point of the Batleth.
Like, it helps if they're laying on the ground.
It does help if they're laying on the ground, because then they can't absorb the blow at all.
Well, every time you see someone pick up a Batleth and start swinging around, they just hit dudes and they just fly. And you're like, huh? Is this a club? Okay.
It's just a stick you hold with 2 hands? I guess the central plexus is different from the vinculum. They just got to make up new shit every time.
Yep.
I think you got to give credit to Garrett Wong when he nails one. When the Borg Queen says, we'll see you soon, Harry, and he says, what did she mean by that? I 100% agreed with his delivery. That statement was so out of left field that it was not menacing. It was too weird to be menacing. Yeah. I thought it would have been fine if he'd laughed and said, okay, would you see me soon? Sure.
Yeah.
I gave best actor to 7, worst actor to the Borg Queen.
Fair.
Worse than Korok or Axum or Laura.
Oh, yeah, Laura.
You may be free like her, but you're not Laura.
As we all know, Laura was played by the lady who plays Ezri Dax. Not the Laura in this episode, Laura from the Kids in the Hall.
Laura from Kids in the Hall was played by Ezri Dax? I don't know nothing about Nicole DeBoer yet. We'll talk about her when she shows up.
Yeah. Started this episode by shouting at my monitor over and over, please don't make me watch this, please. So, always a good start.
When the fucking, there's like a 2-minute sequence of the Borg Queen being assembled while she talks to this guy about how he's got a disease. It's very bad.
I was so mad. And my only other quick hitter was, dogs should be allowed to vote! One more this week.
Yeah. The winner last week was Deep Space Nine. It's only got to beat 22 this week. But spoiler alert, I know you gave it 27. So I'm just going to say, it's got a real good chance.
Yes, but it made your skin crawl when you heard that I gave it 27.
I couldn't believe it because my pre-discussion score is a 9, and we've never been that far apart on an episode before.
No.
So we'll get into all of that as
like
we discuss.
Like the Vulcans have new powers every week, we discover some new shit here every week, too.
As we discuss Valiant.
My first line here is incorrect. I said the teaser's the B plot this week, but it's not. It's the nothing plot. This is not.
There's
a
no B
plot.
Yeah, no. Don't worry about it. The teaser is a part of this season's weird send off to Jadzia Dax.
Yeah, Quark's replicator's busted. He's swamped. Nobody has come to fix his replicator. Supposed to be Rom or Nog. For reasons. Only Ferengis are allowed to do it, I guess. But Dax shows up to do it and explains that Nog is headed to Ferenginar. Quark is so upset that she's mucking up her beautiful runway model hands. And Odo says it's because he's in love with Dax. Quark denies it, but we all know it's true, I guess. Anyway, on runabout whatever, Jake is with Nog. Fun. Everybody wanted no Jay back. It's the Shenandoah. The runabout's the Shenandoah. Anyway, Jake says Nog is personally delivering a message to the Negus. And that must mean it's a request for an alliance. I kind of assumed they were already pretty wrapped up together, but maybe not. Jake complains about not having access to the Negus. Nog wants him to keep his stupid reporter face out of his business. Anyway, some Jem'Hadar fighters snore in and attack whatever starbase they were coming from.
I mean, it was 257, but that don't matter.
Anyway, one fighter breaks and heads for them. Credits! Nog tries to pull some fancy-ass maneuvers, but, you know, runabout ain't built for this ship, man. A Defiant-type ship pops in to save them, and it's the USS Valiant. And they get beamed over, and they're greeted by a cadet, who is the acting transporter chief. On the bridge, they discover everybody is a cadet here, and Nog tells Jake that this is Red Squad. You know, the Boy Scout terrorists from the one where Admiral Layton tried to take over Earth.
Yep.
I guess they were promoted.
That's what they were up to the last time we saw them, for sure.
I think they got promoted for that. They blow up the Jem'Hadar fighter, and the captain makes some real squinty, shitty remarks to Nog and Jake, and then we get a download. This was a big training exercise that went tits up. The senior officers were killed in some unexpected battle. The Dominion took over this part of space, and these cadets carried on running the ship and fighting the war from behind enemy lines. But wait, why are they in the same part of space as this runabout was then? I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, so, hey, it's good news. You guys basically have made it to Starbase 257.
That's right.
I'm guessing that those four Jem'Hadar attack ships didn't blow up Starbase 257.
Nah, I don't think so. Anyway, it's Star Command. It's the failed pilot Star Command featuring Morgan Fairchild.
It doesn't even have Morgan Fairchild in it.
It's a DS9 script instead.
Yeah, and by the way, I don't think it's as good. No one hangs themselves.
It doesn't get nearly dark enough. And it tries because it's, you know, war is hell. It's one of the many. But no, it's not as dark as the one guy being a traitor and hanging himself. Anyway, this Captain Squinto got a field commission when the real captain beefed it. But he also makes it clear he has specifically refused to tell Starfleet about that change in command. So we know he sucks.
Yeah.
Nobody seems to trust Jake because he's not in the fucking child's uniform. But Transporter Chief Kelly Clarkson, Marjan said that's who she reminded her of, gets close to him.
See, I thought she was like, they couldn't get Candace Cameron.
They wanted Deej.
Do you know what I mean? Deej. They wanted Deej in space. From Full House, but they couldn't get her, and they couldn't get Stephanie Tanner either.
No, because she told them number two. That science fiction was the work of the devil or something.
That's right. That's right. Yes, that is correct. Yeah.
They talk about the moon, where she grew up. She misses home because of this long fucking space war of so many months. And she gets all emotional and excuses herself. Meanwhile, Nog's been promoted to chief engineer, and he's all in. He's always loved these fucking terrorist LARPers, so this makes sense to him.
Yep.
He helps them overcome some of the limitations.
He's so all in that he hallucinates an extra pip that they don't give him. But he tells Jake, see, I'm a lieutenant commander now, and points at Lieutenant Junior Gray rank.
No. But the Red Squad logo counts as a pip. You didn't know that?
Oh, counts as a pip? But doesn't that mean that Karen What's-Her-Nut would be a captain? Because she's definitely got three pips.
Yeah. And the other guy's
Waters has promoted himself to Commodore.
Yeah. Space Commodore Squinto.
Yeah.
Anyway, he helps them overcome some of the limitations on the Valiant that they've already fixed on the Defiant. Transporter Chief Clarkson gets caught crying, and everybody gets mad at Jake. And he gets called into the principal's office, but the principal is 12 years old. And he and the vice principal are mad at Jake because the crew can't afford to get, like, upset right now.
Yes.
Also, he says, sit back and take it all in. This is the greatest story in the whole Dominion War, I said about myself. Just watch me and write about it and let everyone know I was chosen by God to kill Jem'Hadar in space. But also, stay away from my crew.
Yeah, but do it like a nature documentary. Don't interfere.
Jake runs into Nog, who is gleefully playing along with this weird G.I. Joe cosplay. And for once, Jake is the smart one. And he says, these fuckers seem hella off to me, man. But Nog doesn't want to hear it. Then they finally catch up to this this prototype Dominion battleship they've been hunting. Like a mission for Wing Commander or something.
It is.
And Squinto gets the crew together and says, good news. We got a hella good probe snapshot of this ship, and we can finally go home. But that's for the losers and ugly people. Stupids. And we're going to blow that shit up. And Nog thinks it's risky. Jake thinks it's stupid. But this guy yells...
Jake says, it's so dumb, even my idiot dad wouldn't do it.
He stands up and gives up.
And he's dumb.
A full-throated defense of his father for some reason. No one really cares. My father, you might have heard of him, Ben Sisko. He's basically the greatest guy who ever lived. And
why'd he turn command of the fleet over to Martok?
I'm in the middle of... I'm the one talking right now. You can talk after me.
I heard he's way more into profit shit now.
Well... That's actually true, and we had a real long conversation about that a couple of weeks ago.
Last week, and we had a big problem with it, for sure. What are you talking about?
Anyway, this Captain Squinto yells Red Squad, and the whole crew chants it back at him for an uncomfortably long time. Jake and Nog have a fight about it, because Nog's going along with this dumb plan, and Jake goes to the brig, because they're spying on him, and they saw all the shit he said. Then a montage that is purposefully over the top so you understand that this is all dumb happens.
Yes.
The cadets preparing to go play soldier, and the captain makes what he imagines is a rousing speech over the PA. Anyway, this plan hinges on a cool new torpedo that's gonna mess up the Dominion ship's antimatter storage or something. I don't remember. And blow it up so fucking easy. Just so fucking easy. But they have to get really close and they have to aim manually. Anyway, after taking a lot of hits and so many M80s going off in their consoles, they land what appears to be a solid hit. And explosions engulf the enemy ship. But whoops, it didn't work the way they thought it would. I mean, it did something. That was so many explosions.
Yeah.
Anyway...
It just exploded away from the ship, I guess, like a shape charge. Didn't do dick.
It didn't do anything, because then they start to get hella blowed up. The captain, who, by the way, I didn't say earlier, is addicted to stims. He beefs.
Oh, yeah, he's on stims. He's doing stims. Jake finds out he's on stims.
Yeah, then the first officer beefs it, and I guess it comes down to Nog, and he looks around, and he's like, oh, I think we're fucked. And this transporter chief wants to keep fighting, despite it all being over, but Nog convinces her to head for the escape pods, and they let Jake out of the brig on the way. Which is very nice of them. And the ship gets destroyed along with, you know, almost all of the escape pods.
Yeah, the Jem'Hadar take a minute to shoot up some lifeboats, but then they're like, ah.
But, you know, because of writing.
Yeah.
Jake, Nog, and Kelly Clarkson get out of there in the little pod. And the Defiant picks up a distress signal and rescues Noje, despite Worf's warning that it may be a trap to lure them into an ambush. Sisko ordered a cloak and they get in there. Anyway. I say again, literally nobody else made it.
Yeah.
Jake, Nog, and this girl. Jake talks to Nog in the Defiant sickbay, and Jake says he's probably going to write about it. And Nog says he should write that it was a good ship and a good crew, but they made a big whoopsie. And Clarkson says that's not true. Squinto was a great man. So she still doesn't get it. And Nog tells this lady softly and nicely, listen, bitch, that ain't it. And then he walks out. Turns out he left her with his Red Squad insignia or something. Anyway, what use is it resigning from an entirely dead unit? Credits. What was this one about?
Yeah, I know we normally do it this way, but I'm going to insist that you go first because I still don't understand listening to your description where all these points are going to come from.
I told you offline I didn't want to give it any points. Yeah, I would have been very happy to not give it points.
I gotta know why. Right. So why don't you give your take first?
We are taught to idolize the troops, and that war is glorious, and it's all honor and glory, but that's just a weird fascism idea, and we need to leave that shit behind. Jake sees it from the start, but it takes the whole crew eating it for Nog to get there. This other girl is so brainwashed, she never gets it. And just because somebody wears a uniform and says cool-sounding shit, that doesn't make him a fucking hero. And I gave that an 8.
There is a lot of talk in this episode about how Jake doesn't get it because he's never put on the uniform.
Uh-huh.
And so the guy definitely do some equating.
The guy plays as hard as he can, cool captain, and everyone totally buys in, and they're all like, weird. We're honorable soldiers in this great space war, but they're just kids.
Here's what I have.
Okay.
I guess the takeaway here is don't assemble a group of special children and treat them like they're special and make a bunch of exceptions, or their hubris will doom them.
I mean, that is also what happens for sure. They do think that they are. I mean, the captain says he was fucking chosen.
I mean,
man,
when they all chant Red Squad,
it's the least intricate chant. You can't chant that more than 4 or 5 times before you start looking around like, we're done now, right? Are we still doing that? We're still saying Red Squad? Oh, geez.
I mean, I did think there was one guy in the back who thought he was at a WWF event and shouted, show me your puppies. But like, I don't know who he was talking to.
Yeah, I didn't see a lot of puppies on that ship because they were all kids.
Well, also, they have invented some new cadet uniforms for this episode that are like cadet versions of the First Contact uniforms.
Yeah.
And they did make them all real baggy. I think they were doing a lot to emphasize that these were kids. Yes,
they did so much.
They picked all short actors.
Yeah.
And then they had them all play young.
We'll get to it in execution because I hated every minute of it, but they really did try hard to do a thing specifically, to do a specific thing.
No, I'm just sticking with my 2. I guess we're going to be apart on this one.
Yeah, it happens.
Execution.
Okay.
It ain't great. The only regular characters are Nog and Jake, and we spend no time at all figuring out why Nog goes all in on this. Like, Aaron Eisenberg had an actor's secret about this episode.
Oh.
That there's some old Ferengi stuff at play here, and Nog sees an opportunity to make himself a big name and goes for it Ferengi style, but none of that gets into the text of the episode.
Or, I don't even know what that means. Getting into it Ferengi style, shouldn't he be like...
Like, he just goes right for it. Like, he takes a big risk and he doesn't care, you know, like... This is an opportunity for big career advancement for him to do this chief engineer stint on this dumb ship. As dumb as it is to say, if we're going to make, what is Jake going to write about this? How is this going to be remembered? A central question in the episode. Maybe this should be told from his point of view.
Yeah.
As it stands, we get a lot of lower deck scenes with none of the Deep Space Nine cast. But the ship has such a doomed vibe from the very beginning that those scenes aren't immersive. Like, everything else is telling you, don't worry about this guy.
Yeah.
His role in the episode is to die from overconfidence.
Yep. Oh, yeah, that one is telegraphed for sure.
They want these kids to seem young and green, and they made them act scared all the time. All of them are scared the whole time.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying is, although I still feel sorry for the actress who played the Augment Persis in Enterprise, I liked those Wunderkids slightly better than these ones.
Well, sometimes they were British. So that was
what I thought that is.
Yeah, half the time they were British, and that was something.
Yeah. So I gave it another 2. But since you have pointed out that they were attempting to do a thing, I'm guessing this is going to be another area where they came up big for you.
Yeah. At first I said, hey, it's an episode about something. It's a rarity. I said, it's not good. It's cheesy in some very intentional ways that are meant to point out how dumb these kids are for thinking this way. Now, the fact that there's a whole group of elite cadets that all feel this way is pretty hack. Like, there's just literally no dissent that we see in this episode. But they got to do this thing in 40 minutes, so they ain't really got time for nuance. Like babies, they ape all of the heroic stereotypes we've all been force-fed our whole lives, and definitely people in Starfleet do. All about how what a hero Ben Sisko is, even though we know he's a war criminal. Anyway, oddly, Wild Jack Sisko is the one with brains this week. I guess because he's an outsider. It makes you wonder if these guys had just been nice to him, he'd have gotten as swept up as Nog.
Yeah, I wonder.
Another entry in War is Hell, but this one had a specific enough take and really held our hand through the damn thing. I even really hated the crew of that ship, which I think I was supposed to do, so I found it effective. Even though the premise of this episode makes as much sense as Star Command did, I gave it a 7.
Oh, man. Like, I knew it had to be this way. It's just bumming me out. What did you do for... How about world building?
Drink replicators busted again. It is confirmed, in case it hadn't been previously, that Nog is the only Ferengi in Starfleet, although that confirmation comes from Jake, so what does he know?
That's a good question.
USS Republic is some kind of training ship in the Sol system. Obviously, this ship and its backstory about a weird training mission with Red Squad that makes no sense, but it's what happened according to Squinto. Luna is what they call the moon on Earth, but on the moon they just call it the moon. I don't know, there you go. I saw that cadet in there that Sisko yelled at last time we saw these fuckers. He's in it.
Yeah, Riley War, whatever his name was, he's back.
Yeah, they brought that guy back. He's not even in the episode. He don't even matter.
He's dead now.
They just brought him back to be like, huh, remember that guy? Yo, you don't? Okay. Well, anyway, we brought him back. Yeah, I give it a 3. I'm reducing it down. I had that higher, but that is only a 3.
We've got, like you said, training ships, the Republic, etc. The return of Red Squad. They apparently were not disbanded after the weird coup attempt.
No, I say again, promoted?
Yeah, seems that way.
Very odd.
Starfleet declared the ship lost 8 months ago, but also has been sending the ship orders about tracking a battleship. Just in case.
I got the feeling those orders were going to everyone. And this guy,
by the way, has not confirmed that he received those orders, I'm guessing, because he claims he's maintained radio silence.
Those orders go directly to them, or were those just like...
Hey, if you're out there...
Please. Generally disseminated.
We think there's a prototype ship, please. Dude, these guys are... Who knows where they started, but they could be at Earth in 2 days from where this episode picks up.
Yep.
Anyway.
That's what I was so confused about. They're like, we've been behind enemy lines the whole time. I was like, well, I mean, you're not right now. So, what do you mean? You're just like, your starbase, whatever.
Exactly. The Jem'Hadar have a new type of battleship, but since we know nothing about the size, strength, or capabilities of any Jem'Hadar ship, any Dominion ship, from the little attack ships, which appear huge in this episode,
yeah,
to the regular cruisers or whatever they are, to this new ship, it's very hard to tell what we're supposed to think about this guy. Yeah. So I gave it a 2.
Characterization.
Nog hates that Jake is a reporter because the guy does not know how to be off the record, and that tracks for me.
Yeah.
Dude is on all the time.
Well, he thinks he's a really good reporter. That's the fucking thing that pisses me off the most. If I had to hang out with that guy and he was always like, I'm a reporter.
Yeah. You're
like, I don't think that's true, buddy.
I had to eat all the fully loaded nachos to report on how good I'm the reporter. So. That's right. Leave you with just the chips. I didn't think Red Squad were still Nog's heroes after the power grid stunt with Layton, but he sure is happy to put that brooch on, so he's got some growing up to do.
Yes.
Jake thinks his dad would know better than this, but he never says out loud, you know, because he's 42 and you guys are a bunch of dumb kids.
That is a part of it he should say, though. He's like twice your age.
Anyway, I guess he's not impressed by the uniform stuff, and I get that too. Quark, for the second time in the second half of this season, has feelings about Dax, and I don't... Why? Why are they introducing this?
Yeah, she's already married, man.
She is already married.
Is he going to make a play for her?
I don't know. Is this so he can be really sad when something happens in a minute? Like, it's coming.
For the Star Trek writers, that is the only reason a female character exists, is to make a man feel a certain way.
So, yeah. That and they're like, listen, we've only got, like, a couple of good actors on this show. We kind of need them all to be sad about Dax, so that means we got to start doing some stuff with Quark.
That's right. It's not enough that they're good friends who play Tongo together or whatever.
So give me a 3 for me for characterization.
All right, Quark is in love with Dax, whatever. Jake still thinks he's a reporter. He finds these brainwashed kids creepy right from the start, and how not. He gets brigged for constantly talking shit because he cannot be cool at all. Nog starts the episode as the stoic veteran. Oh, as always, just kind of like tolerating Jake's bullshit. But then he proves he's still just as naive as all of these other cadets and gets all swept up just like they did. Thought that was an aspect of the episode that was effective. He's supposed to be like an upperclassman by now, right? But he's, you know, got his field promotion or whatever, or got his field assignment.
Can Nog be an upper? What season did he go to the academy? Could this be his third year?
I thought it would be something like that. I mean, that other one where the changelings were there, wasn't that 2 years ago?
Yeah.
I think. I don't know.
Maybe.
So anyway, like, he's about the same age as these kids, so it kind of tracks in that way. But I mean, it's not great for his character that he's just as naive as them, but maybe he just sucks. Otherwise, it's Little League. I give it a 5. I did end up reducing down on a few things.
You did, but not enough. This is now the episode where we have the greatest difference. Because I gave it a 9, and you gave it a 23.
Yeah. Well, that means it gets the win.
For 32, so it's definitely going to win. But do you have some quick hitters?
Legit couldn't remember Squinto's name until Jake and Nog said Waters like 7 times in 20 seconds, and I finally remembered to write it down. But
yeah, his name is Tim Waters, and it's for some reason that's not memorable.
No.
It's not Cal Hudson. But do you know what I mean?
No, it's not Cal Hudson. That's a great name. But the way he just like, he kept squinting like he thought that was a character thing. Uh-huh. The actor thought, I'm doing something right here. Look at the way I'm squinting and I look like I'm a mouth breather. Like, what is that? Was that acting?
Yeah.
Or was that just that guy?
It's a good question.
And then the second in command, the girl, she, I'll just say she had real short girl energy.
Her actor secret is that she's constantly peeing her pants.
She seemed like she might be 14.
Yeah.
I was wild confused.
It's very odd that he picked her to be second in command.
Maybe she was a child genius like Wesley and she really was 14.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's all I had for quick hitters.
She does seem like young, youthified Keiko O'Brien. Rascals Keiko O'Brien.
So maybe she went through a transporter accident.
Maybe.
They didn't have the idea to just fucking beam her back. Just beam her back. It's fine.
I will say again, a weird goodbye this season is saying to Jadzia Dax.
Yeah.
Between the one where Worf can't leave her behind on that jungle planet to die, and again in this one where...
We've agreed it would have been way, 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 way better if she just died on that planet.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
They made but a bad then choice. They couldn't have said recovered the symbiont.
Then they couldn't have been very spiteful to the actress?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, that's what they were really into. Yeah, we're, what, 4 episodes away from the finale now? We got 3 more and then Tears of the Prophets? So
yeah, something like that. It's just weird to have Quark say, she's too good to be getting her hands dirty in my replicator. Like, man, hey, Quark, that's weird.
Well, didn't he do this shit with Bashir not that long ago? Like, yeah. Where he was like, he used it against him in the game.
To win the fucking Tongo game.
Yeah.
That O'Brien forced, that was the B plot, right? In that episode where Jadzia Dax almost died?
It was the horrible, terrible B plot.
Yeah. Kelly Clarkson is not up to this moon monologue.
No.
No. That did not land. That one didn't land.
Also, it seemed like the actress might have gotten, like, dry mouth. Just wasn't getting the words out so good.
And then I wrote, well, it's worse than Star Patrol or Space Command or whatever that Morgan Fairchild TV movie was.
literally was the exact same plot. I couldn't believe it. I was like, really? Really? They're just biting everybody out here. Anybody who did a space show got fucking eaten alive by these guys. I bet there's some Andromeda shit they stole too.
Did this guy put his trucker speed in a Tic Tac box?
Yep.
That fucking thing he uses to pop one out. That can't be it's how not... medicine's dispensed in the future.
Look, man, a fucking 400 years went by and people weren't any better at hiding when they were doing drugs.
No.
They didn't learn nothing.
No, and by the way, I know we've only seen hypo sprays before, but we don't have... That's not movie shorthand for anything, so of course this guy's popping pills.
Yeah. Yep.
And then I wrote, fuck me, dude. Nog just pointing at his lieutenant junior grade pics and saying he's a lieutenant commander now. Now listen, I know it's all made up, but like, a child only has to watch one or two episodes of Star Trek to figure out how the rank system works. It's not complicated. It's very easy to understand.
We definitely
with the weird exception of Kaczynski and whatever's happening with O'Brien's rank in TNG.
Yeah.
But it's like, this is season 6 of Deep Space, and this is deep in season 6, and clearly Aaron Eisenberg doesn't know what the rank pins mean.
Well, either that, or they just pay so little attention to what Wardrobe has done. They just, like, no one checks or looks at it or anything. He's not looking at his own pips. He can't see those.
What are you talking about? I put the uniform on, and then I had them apply. They had applied shit to my face for 3 hours.
Yeah,
so
he doesn't know.
I didn't get a good look at it, I guess.
Yeah, he's just like, he points at it because he's supposed to in the script. Whoever is putting these fucking uniforms on him is not paying any fucking attention to what those things are.
It's just so wild to have them point at a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listen, man, Waters has bullseyed Womp Rats in his T-16 back home. They're not much bigger than that. He knows they can take this thing out.
And when after Nog and everyone's just like, this fucking idea is stupid, he doesn't have any good comeback. He's just like, but we can do it, though. You know, because we're Red Squad.
At that point, I wrote, genuinely concerned that this episode is not going to have a lesson in it for me because I'm not insane. And then... It's not that they couldn't do it. It's not that they couldn't make the shot or survive the attack. It. The plan just didn't work.
Just didn't do anything. The way the little girl says, it didn't work. They wrote something truly excellent this week.
Yeah.
It didn't work. No explanation as to why it didn't work or like... No. What happened? Why were there 5,000 explosions and the ship was just fine? Just nothing. Just like, it didn't work.
I don't know if this should surprise anybody, but I guess the Geminar think it's pretty cool to shoot escape pods.
Yeah. Except one.
And they also have weapons that cause people to bleed out horribly if their name is Munez or Munez.
Munez. Munez. Yeah. Munez. yeah, well, they were going to shoot that last escape pod, but then like in episode 4, the guy's like, I'm not reading any life signs on that pod. I'll destroy it anyway. And the other guy went, no bother.
Yeah.
And you're so, huh? What do you mean?
Hey, that ammunition's not free.
What are you talking about? You're looking for droids. Maybe they don't give a life sign. Why don't you just shoot it? I don't understand. Anyway.
Best actor, I wrote, I don't know, man, Quark?
It is one scene in the beginning.
It's a real paucity of acting to choose from here.
No, these kid actors are not any better than the disfigured models that played the augments, for sure.
Worst actor, it's Waters for me.
Awful.
This dude did a bad job.
Awful from the start. I had no idea what the fuck he was doing.
Yeah. So yeah, that's all the quick ones.
We did it. That's a whole week.
In last place this week, Voyager, Unimatrix Zero Part 1. This is the part where I traditionally ask Matt, are you excited for part 2?
Well, I hope to find out what's going to happen between the Borg Queen and Harry. I hope a little romance brews.
Yeah. Was that supposed to be sexual menace? Yeah, Let's find out next week.
Ooh, I'm looking forward to seeing you. Ooh, Ensign Harry Kim doing it for the Borg Queen. Maybe.
Second place this week, TNG Lessons. Just a real misfire.
Yeah, it's not a good one. No one really came off good in that one.
The winner with 32 points, 23 of which came from you,
yeah,
was Valiant. That's Deep Space Nine's 53rd win, so they've pulled back to within 5 of TNG.
Yeah.
And TNG's got a bunch of stinkers, so...
Even if I'd only given this episode 14, it would have won the week.
Oh, yeah. It didn't have... it wasn't a big... It didn't have to, you know, it didn't have to beat a lot this week.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not hard to imagine.
Oh, yeah, only 5 down now.
A 5-point differential in wins over the course of TNG's terrible late 6th and 7th season.
Yeah, this would be the point during a baseball season where you would start to feel very concerned.
Yeah.
If you were
TNG. You'd like to have a bigger lead than this, knowing that you've got Masks and Dark Page coming up.
I think we spit the bit. I think this is going south.
Yeah. Next time we get together to talk about this, we are going to discuss, for TNG, The Chase.
I mean, just put in as a placeholder 10 on world building for
me. I mean, world building really... is very, it's potentially
again,
very
I do want to rewatch it in case something incredibly stupid is happening there that I don't remember, but it feels like they have bothered
well,
to
I mean,
explain
they do,
a very
I know they link up everyone's DNA question. Like a fucking subway map, but I don't think that makes any sense, but yes.
No, maybe I should look at deductions or something. Maybe it starts at a 10.
Deep Space Nine. Are we going to get into some sex change business with Prophet and Lace?
I don't remember. Which one is this?
Maybe Quark becomes a lady?
Oh, okay. Well, not looking forward to that.
For Ferengi reasons?
Not looking forward to that.
And, of course, we will be opening the 7th season of Voyager with Unimatrix Zero Part 2. Is Janeway okay? Well, it is all going according to plan. So far, so good,
it.
In fact.
I couldn't believe it when they did that.
So
why
far,
bother?
So good.
Then afterward, after he says that, they show us the scenes of them walking around as drones on the ship.
Yeah. Huh? Yes, afterwards.
What? We already know it's fine. Why are you even showing us this?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, it would have been even better if Janeway had winked into the camera as it faded out or whatever.
She just said, the doctor gave me something I'm not really assimilated.
I say to no one in particular. Just puts her hand on the side of her mouth so no one can hear it.
That's what we're watching. That's what you should watch. I don't know who I'm even saying this to, but that's what you should watch if you're going to play along.
Yeah. All right. Well, we fucking did the thing. As you believe, so shall you do. So shall you do.
As you believe,
so shall you do. But then the movie came along and they were like, no, but also they got a boss.
Well, a collective consciousness can't seduce Data. A collective consciousness doesn't have cleavage.
That's right. That's what Jonathan Frakes said.